You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I am your host, Mark Shea. It is a brand new week, a fresh week of weakness. See, that doesn't sound right. That didn't come out the way that I planned.
It's catching for the fact that we're going to be talking about the Beatitudes, and so we're having a blessed new week of weakness. See?
Blessed are the weak, which yes. is almost like blessed are the meek. And a lot of people think that blessed are the meek basically means blessed are the weak. Yes. But I thought it might be good today. That voice you're hearing there is my co-host, partner in crime, babe of babeliciousness, Sherry Antonetti.
Hello,
Sherry Antonetti. How you doing?
I am doing very well. Thank you very much.
Good. Before we got on the show, she was telling me all about game day at the Antonetti household. So that was yesterday, right?
Yes, we had a screen-free day where we played cards and we played a couple of board games and Uno, and I was 0-for-5 in all games, but it was a lot of fun.
So blessed are the losers.
Yes. I was practicing humility and docility and all of that, those good virtues.
Yeah, those are all virtues to learn, you know.
Yeah.
One of the things about I thought we'd spend a little time today talking about the Beatitudes, because that was the subject of the readings yesterday. The readings were all about, they were all addressed to what the sort of people that Donald Trump calls losers. That was every one of the readings was to like all the losers, right? So the Old Testament reading from Zephaniah was basically saying God is going to preserve a remnant, which is another way of saying it's speaking to all the people who people who are faithful to God, who are in the minority in ancient Israel. And it's basically saying, yep, look around, you know, all these people that are in charge right now are all going to be gone one of these days. They look like the winners, but they're not the winners.
So this is a call out to all of you who didn't make the B team.
Yeah, it's for all, you know, if you're one of those people that was picked last for softball all the time, you know, those are the people that the readings yesterday were addressing.
Yes.
And the letter from Paul is the same way. Paul's writing to the Corinthians, and he's talking to the Corinthians. And he's saying, take a look around at the sanctuary that you're sitting in right now while this letter is being read to you. Because, first of all, the reason this letter is being read to you is because most of you are illiterate. That's why these letters were read aloud in the sanctuary. They were all written, intended to be read aloud because most people that Paul's speaking to can't read. Mm. So somebody reads his letter out loud, and who's being read to? Well, slaves, women,
deplorables,
children, the dregs of the earth, right? The people, the deplorables of the ancient world. And he's saying to them, you know, look, God didn't choose the winners. He chose you guys. and as we read the rest of the letter, we're going to hear what these guys are like. The letter to the Corinthians is just, it's an amazing, both letters to the Corinthians are amazing letters because they're written to this thoroughly screwed up congregation of early Catholics. Who are doing all these dumb things, you know, and they're doing dumb things because of the diagnosis that Paul gave us at the beginning, that not many of you were wise, not many of you were, well-educated, not many of you were rich, you know, God has chosen the foolish things of the world and the things that are not, the losers, to put to shame the winners.
Yes.
And so Paul knows his audience, you know, and he's amazingly frank with them. I mean, there's not a lot of buttering up going on.
He does not schmooze his audience before speaking.
Not schmoozing his audience. And so, you know, we want to tell ourselves that there was a golden age of the church, you know, when it was just simple folk with hearts of gold. That's true of some of them. But what's true of, you know, most of the early church is that it was a rabble of, you know.
It was people who needed the salvation that came from the church. We're all very messed up.
Yeah, very screwed up people. And you know, one of the funniest, it reminds me of one of the funniest, you don't normally turn to John Henry Newman for thigh slapping. Well, you know.
Yeah. No, that doesn't. Yeah, he's not the Seinfeld of his age. Sorry.
This guy. But in his book on the essay on the development of Christian doctrine, which was a very important book for me personally, it's also a very important book in the 19th century, and has continued to be an enormously important book for understanding the church on into the 20th and 21st centuries. It's been said that the Second Vatican Council was Newman's council. I think there's a lot to that. And one of the things that Newman does in the course of his work is he is looking at, essentially he's looking at how Catholic doctrine evolves over time. The Catholic understanding of doctrine evolves over time. It's not a coincidence that he is a contemporary of Darwin. And what's current in 19th century thought is we finally got enough history under our belts, both natural history and human history, to be able to look back now and see not only how living things have changed over time, because we now know enough about the Earth's history to see that there has been change in living things, but we also know enough about human history and the history of human thought to see that there's been growth and development and change in human thought, and that includes in the thought of the church. And so Newman writes his essay on the development of Christian doctrine, and he looks at the way in which doctrine changes and develops over time and yet remains the same. And so what he's really doing is he's kind of applying to the teaching of the church the imagery that Jesus uses in the parable of the mustard seed. So what happens to a mustard seed when you put it in the ground? Well, it doesn't look like a mustard seed once it comes up, and yet it's more mustardy than ever. And so it's changed, but it stayed the same. It's retained its internal integrity, but precisely what that internal integrity does is it throws out roots, it throws out branches, it makes more mustard seeds.
Like an embryo becomes a fully mature adult.
Exactly. So a baby grows and changes, so I don't look like I did on the day I was born. I've got a beard now, a rich full manly beard, I should add, and I weigh more, a lot more, and I've got, you know, muscles, and my voice is deeper, and all of those things.
You can hold your head up.
But at the same time, I didn't transform from a baby into an octopus or a pine tree or some other thing. I remained Mark Shea, but I became more Mark Shea than I was when I was a baby.
Yes.
And the church has done the same thing. And so over time, the church has changed and developed. And yet at the same time, she remains the same. And so one of the hilarious points that Newman makes in the course of this argument is he says, you know, when you look at the early church, it was all screwed up. And all these weird, what occasioned the writings of the New Testament documents? Well, you know, what's the, Paul's got to write to the Corinthians and say things like, stop getting drunk at Mass.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't spit on poor people when they come into the sanctuary. And, you know,
leave some food for the rest of them.
Leave food for people at your agape meals. And you know, and these kinds of things, right? Stop that. Tell that guy to stop sleeping with his mother, you know, and things like this.
And don't champion a pastor over Christ, you know.
Yeah,
I am for
exactly.
Apollo.
Yeah, so, you know, stop the cult of celebrity stuff. I didn't die for you. Peter didn't die for you. Apollos didn't die for you. Knock that off, you know. And so on the one hand, you got, and so he says, you know, look, the reason the New Testament documents were written because the church was all screwed up. And Paul's running around having to put out all these fires. And he says, and if you look at the church, you know, during the period of the great councils, the reason, why were the councils called? The councils weren't called because everything was great. The councils were called because the church all screwed up and needed to have these councils called in order to deal with all these problems going on in the church. And if you look at the church during the late Roman period, church is all screwed up. Look at the church in the High Middle Ages, church is all screwed up. That's why there's continuing councils going on and all these fracases and everything going on. And he goes on through the history of the church. He says, so when you come to the church today, you'll see that the church is all screwed up. And that shows it's the same church.
We're consistent.
That's so true. Well, we'll continue this discussion. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Sherry Antonetti. We're going to be talking about the Beatitudes. And we'll be back, Redbox Media, right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Hello! Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. And we are here today with Sherry Antonetti, and we're talking about the Beatitudes. And the Beatitudes are, the interesting thing to me about the Beatitudes is that they pronounce a blessing on, all the blessings are pronounced on things that nobody wants to do.
Yes.
blessed. Who wants to be poor? Who wants to mourn? Right? I want to be persecuted. I want
to hunger. Who wants to be hungry?
Hungry and thirsty. You know. Yeah.
Persecuted. Yeah. There you go.
And even being a peacemaker, frankly, I mean, being a peacemaker is like the nicest sounding of all the Beatitudes, till you actually have to do it.
Yeah.
And then what you discuss, Chesterton once remarked that it takes three to make a quarrel. The full potentialities of human fury, he said, cannot be fully realized until the third party tactfully intervenes. And so the fate of the peacemaker is the fate of Martin Luther King Jr., Gandhi.
Have you ever been in a Facebook quarrel and you wind up losing both friends because you tried to be the intermediary? That's the peacemaker.
Yeah, that's you know what the insight that the Christian tradition gives is that peace is made, says Paul, through the shedding of his blood. That's how peace was made, according to Paul. That's how Christ made peace for us, is by shedding his blood. And so the fate of the peacemaker
is to
have a share in shedding his blood with Christ. That's what happens if you're a peacemaker. And so even the nicest sounding of the Beatitudes, what lies at the back of it is a blessing on something that nobody wants. And so all the blessings are they're all Lenten kinds of blessing. They're all things that have to do with fasting, being poor, suffering with Christ.
Yes, they all have to do with the cross. I look at that list and I'm going, yeah, I don't want to be sad. I don't want to be humble. I don't want to be poor. I don't want to feel outraged because I've been wronged. I don't want to be forbearing.
Yeah. Being meek, you know, nobody being meek, just as somebody said, being meek sounds like, you know, being a dartboard or a doormat. And that's what people think of meek. And yet, of course, Jesus is described as meek, and he's not a dartboard or a doormat.
Yeah, you know, meek makes you sound like you're the kid that's being kicked, had the sand kicked out of him on the beach in that comic strip that's on the back. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, what meek means is humble or unassuming or without pretension. And I will say that my lesson of who are the meek came best through my son, who has Down syndrome. He's 8 years old, and he is unassuming, and because he's got Down syndrome, but everyone also assumes that he can't do anything. And so the other day he was in line for water at his school, and the girls all there very wanted to help him drink water. And he turned to them and he said, "I can do that." And they were all blown away by the simple statement that he could get water for himself. But it wasn't a putting them down, and it wasn't a refusal of help. It was simply an assertion, you know, I don't need help with that. I'm good. But but he was able to express that. And at the same time, he knows how, you know, no one says help faster if they need it. Whereas others will sit there and be stubborn and persist. I'm going to get, you know, I know I'm going to bang against this wall until it falls. He'll be the first one to say help, you know.
Oh,
so,
you know, I think that that's, I've got, we have friends, their boy is, gosh, he's 30 something now, but, has Down syndrome. Uh-huh. Just the sweetest guy in the world, you know?
Yes.
Just a lovely guy. He lives here in Seattle now. His folks live in California, but he's joined a L'Arche community here in Seattle.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful. Oh.
Yeah. Big fan of the L'Arche communities, man.
They're beautiful. No, they're amazing. But they are examples of the Beatitudes, because these people are poor in spirit. They're meek. They're merciful. They are absolutely merciful. They are very straightforward about when they've been wrong. So they will tell you that they've been wrong, but they're not vindictive about it. They're not. Yeah. I mean, they're not. That doesn't mean they're without sin. I mean, my son will point a stuffed elephant at his sister and go pretend it's a laser shooting at her. And when she starts to cry, he goes, "Heh, heh," because he knows that he's got her. You know, so there's a little impish wickedness in there too. But you know, which I find deeply satisfying to know. So feel good. You're real. But what they do is make you they teach you how to see with kinder eyes, less busy eyes. You get reintroduced to wonder. Like, we were playing the game day the other day, and I honestly didn't expect Paul to be able to play this game we were playing. It was a matching game. And he sat down with us, and lo and behold, he put a piece in the right spot, and we all, I mean, my husband, me, and his sister all looked like, oh my gosh, you can do this. Again, that's the same thing. You can do this. And it wasn't that we didn't think he's smart. It's just we didn't expect him to be able to strategize and do what we were doing. So it was a case of being surprised by wonder, and that's what they can do, because you don't expect it, and the poor in spirit always surprise you.
That's one of that's one of the great things about especially little children, just in general. My little granddaughter, Seraphim is just, everything is amazing for her right now. And so her dad invited her out on a walk, and mom needed a little bit of a break. And so he wanted to take her out on a walk, and she was reluctant for whatever reason. And so he was saying, he said, if you come with me on a walk, we'll see birds and trees and bugs and logs. And her response was, oh, logs?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Logs.
And it turned out that the reason logs were the magic selling point for her was they'd been to the beach, and there was driftwood, and she'd had a chance to climb around on the driftwood. And so that for her is what a log is
driftwood
that you get to climb around on. And so this is like, she was ready to go. So off they went, you know, and she had a wonderful, I think she probably had this notion they were going to go to the beach, but they didn't wind up at the beach, but she didn't care because she was happy once she got out in it and was running, having a great time. And, but she's like that all the time. Everything is amazing. And
everything is awesome.
Yeah, everything. She came here yesterday and stayed for a few hours. And so Grandma was playing with her and I was playing with her. And we had a little bit of dinner. And then she climbed down from the table and we were still eating our dinner. And we, at some point or another, the silence set in.
Oh, no. Yes, the dangerous silence.
Jan looks at me and said, it's too quiet.
Yes.
And I thought, uh-oh. And yes. So just then she appeared again. And she was like, she had this sort of vaguely shifty look on her face, but we couldn't figure out why. And so anyway, so the evening went on. And at some point or another, I suggested the brilliant idea of helping Grandpa feed the fish.
Ah.
Which she thinks is awesome. She loves the fish in our aquarium. So I went to get the fish food, and it wasn't there.
Oh, dear.
And I thought, did you take the fish food? I looked at Jan. She was going, I don't know where it is. I thought, uh-oh.
Oh, dear.
I went in the den and found the fish food, which she had carefully poured out of the fish food container into, like, a bunch of little boxes and things.
Oh, no.
And so there's only a little bit spilled all over the floor, but she had apparently been doing science. And that was the, that had been the silence. Was doing this.
But I love it. But how do they think of this?
Who knows? But, you know, she is, the thing about Seraphim, as with all little children, she's poor in spirit.
Yes.
Because it doesn't occur to her to think that she can compete with adults. We are these distant, immense, godlike figures who know everything.
Yes.
And so she could certainly say no to us when she doesn't want to do something, but it she's not self-conscious about her, her greatness. She assumes that she lives in a world that is presided over by immense powers beyond her understanding.
Yes, that's right. I'm not in charge. I am not in charge. I may want to do things, but I'm not in charge.
Right. And so there's a meekness about her and a humility about her that's just adorable, of course. Well, we'll be back right after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Sherry Antonetti talking about the Beatitudes. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Sherry Antonetti. We were talking a bit about the Beatitudes, and we're listening to the Beatitudes during exactly the same week that
the executive order was
The huge refugee crisis is unspooling in front of us, and you know, this has everything to do with the refugee crisis. You know, we're looking at the greatest humanitarian disaster since World War II, and we're turning our backs on it. And in addition to that, you know, we're watching as ridiculous injustices are being done to people. You know, what is it? 500,000 people with green cards.
Yes.
Are being told you can't come back to the United States. You know, we're watching families being torn apart. We're watching people who have done nothing being blamed and being treated as though, you know, the great lie that's constantly being told is, you know, wow, we can't just let everybody into the United States.
These people
have already been through an intense vetting process. This ridiculous idea of something called extreme vetting. The process that refugees go through to get into the United States is already incredibly thorough. And all we're really doing is we're just giving in to fear. You know how many refugees have been involved in terrorist attacks on U.S. soil since 9/11?
Zero.
Zero. Not one.
Yeah,
there have been more people killed by kids who got a hold of their dad's gun.
Well, that's from the Cato Institute. That statistic of zero, that's from the Cato Institute.
Liberals.
Yeah.
Haven. Left wing haven of crazy liberal politics, the Cato Institute. Yeah. You know, it's a ridiculous policy. And when we're looking at the Beatitudes and we're looking at, you know, the question of the least of these, this has everything to do with all of that. When we're speaking about it and we're catching flack for it, it has everything. I had a friend of mine, Scott Eric Hall, was saying, you know, people keep telling him, you know, stop talking about this stuff and get back to talking about the Catholic faith, as though the fate of the least of these has nothing to do.
Yeah, it doesn't happen. Why do you think? The scriptures this weekend were the Beatitudes. Scripture is living and speaking to us at every point in time, whenever you read it. Do you think that God doesn't know we need to hear that again when this is sort of thing is going on? I mean, some would call that providential.
Yeah. And our faith, you know, our church is speaking to this today. You know, the Pope has said, you can't turn your back on refugees and call yourself a Christian. You can't do it. You cannot ignore the teaching of Jesus and call yourself a Christian. The Pope is saying these things. We've had, you know, today we've had, who else? Archbishop Vigneron in Detroit. You know, that crazy heretic.
Yes, there you go. And there are... Archbishop Chaput. I mean, there's been a lot of people. Cardinal Chaput. I'm sorry. Is he cardinal?
I think he's Cardinal Chaput.
Yeah. Cardinal.
Cardinals Tobin and Supich have both spoken out. The president of Catholic University of America said, you know, we're going to.
Well, the other thing is that at one point, the Trump administration said that they were just following what their predecessor did.
Your predecessor didn't do this.
I know. And so no, that doesn't work.
You know, and that's the thing is the one of the most maddening things for me as a Catholic is listening to Catholics constantly comparing the things that they support and do, not with the gospel, but with whatever it was Obama said and did, or whatever it was Hillary Clinton was gonna do. And it's like, you know, why are you measuring your acts against somebody that you yourself say is not somebody who should be our moral guide.
Right. Yeah. And you know, let's be clear that the refugees that were, I know I looked up the Pew Research that the U.S. admitted 84,995 refugees in this past year, during the Obama administration. Right. And that's, I want to point out, Germany's admitted, I think, 300,000. And there are 13, according to when I looked on another page, 11 million Syrians have fled their homes. Mm-hmm. And that 13.5 million are in need of humanitarian assistance within the country.
Right.
So that we are saying, no, there's no room in the inn. That's not true. It's just not true.
Well, and again, you know, when we're looking at this, you know, we're looking at a tiny percentage of the actual humanitarian crisis. And we've turned our back even on them. And the reasons that we're giving are reasons that have nothing to do with the gospel.
Or even Homeland Security. Let me say that.
Right. It's got nothing to do with that. And as Catholics, you know, quite apart from our duty as Americans to a place that's in crisis in large measure because of our own policies, why can we not we as Catholics look at this as what it is? There is a gigantic, for us as Christians, is a gigantic evangelistic opportunity here. Now, we don't help people so that we can evangelize them. We don't help people, you know, to get something out of them. We help people because we're Catholic and that's what we do.
Right.
But at the same time, this is a huge chance to bear witness to Christ if we were at all thinking in Christian terms and not in terms of, well, Obama did X, Y, Z.
Right. No.
Hillary did X, Y, and Z. There are, in the United States at present, there are 60,000, most people don't know this, there are 60,000 Muslim background Christian believers in the United States now. Did you know that? Most people don't know that.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
60,000. And there are worldwide, it's estimated, there are about 10 million Muslim background Christian believers. A lot of them are believers on the QT for obvious reasons, especially if they're in Muslim countries. But they're there. They exist. And we have in the United States a huge population of people, Muslim people, who came to the United States precisely to get away from
being persecuted.
All the horrors. And also to get away from just, you know, all the nightmare that's going on in Muslim lands. And a lot of those people are ready to hear the gospel because, you know, they've seen quite enough of Islam. Thank you.
They need to see an authentic witness from us then, and that's the issue.
And what's the witness that we're presenting? Get out.
Yeah.
Bad if your kids die. We don't even care. Because we have this fantasy fear that one of you refugees is about to kill us, as zero refugees have done in the United States. And that is a tragedy, you know, because we're looking at the Beatitudes and we're looking at the least of these and we're saying no.
Well, it's part of it is we have to get people to see with new eyes that this is your brother.
Right.
And what we have in this country is a very common tendency to think I'm good because I'm not an axe murderer, or I'm good because I'm not doing bad things in whatever way I'm not doing bad things, so that we don't think that. But the gospel always requires more. The gospel should never make you feel comfortable. You know, this is the gospel of, you know, this gospel ends in the crucifixion. So you got to understand you're going to be uncomfortable. And if you want a gospel of comfort, there's a gospel of prosperity over there. That's not Catholic. That's not anything close.
Right. Not even remotely Christian.
Yeah.
And so it keeps coming back to that. You know, when we look at the gospel says, blessed are they who hunger and thirst after righteousness. Blessed are they who mourn.
That would be everybody in those tents.
Yeah. And, you know, what are we doing to relieve their mourning? You know, well, one of the more perverse things, you know, that you'll hear from Christians sometimes is, well, then it's good that they're mourning and we should, you know, keep them there in
that place
of suffering, right? It's like you're not getting this, right? You're not listening to this, you know.
That is what the Jesus facepalm at that point, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, no. Our job here is to remember, you know, what goes with. You know, when Jesus talks about judgment, there at no point does Jesus say,
so let them suffer.
Well, you know, at no point does Jesus say, I gave a quiz on the meaning of justification by faith and transubstantiation, and you passed. Welcome into the kingdom which my Father's prepared for you. The judgment is all about our treatment of the least of these. And right now, we're failing that test.
We have least of these all over.
We got the least of these all over, and we're saying no to them. You know, we got to do better. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Sherry Antonetti. And we will be back on Breadbox Media talking about the Beatitudes and the least of these right after this.
If you enjoy listening to Mark Shea and all of his wonderful co-hosts here on Connecting the Dots, then consider becoming a friend of the show and provide your support today. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show. Thank you.
Hello! Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Sherry Antonetti. We've been talking a bit about the Beatitudes. I actually wrote a book on the Beatitudes called Salt and Light.
Yes.
Because the Catholic moral teaching is based on two things. One is the Ten Commandments, which are kind of the floor of Catholic morality, below which you must not go.
Yes.
The Ten Commandments basically say, look, if you can't love your neighbor, at least don't beat him to death with a baseball bat and stuff and run off with his wife. You know? That's bad. It's like, if you go before God and say, I did not beat my neighbor to death with a baseball bat and take his stuff and run off with him, you know, cheer for my sanctity, you know, most people are going to go, wow, what an achievement, you know?
Yeah, I think purgatory is going to be one of your places for a while. You know?
But what the Beatitudes do is they give us the sky's the limit prescriptions for sanctity. So there's no limit on how much you can obey the Beatitudes. And so, you know, the more you obey them, the holier you are and so forth. And of course, none of that can be done without the grace of God. That's the thing about the Beatitudes. The Beatitudes ask us to do things that are really hard. You know?
Like to love our neighbor.
Love your neighbor. We're still love your enemies, which really hurts. You know, loving your enemies is a very painful affair. Now and then you'll get an enemy who turns out to be St. Paul, who has this dramatic conversion and comes to you and, you know, grabs your feet and says, I was so wrong. Please forgive me. You know, and that would be like super gratifying. Once in a while, I've had people come back to me on very rare occasions and say,
those are friends for life.
You know, you were right. And I was wrong. And golly, that feels good. You know?
Yes. But more often it's like, you know, brothers and sisters staring at each other kind of with a snake mongoose sort of look at each other. And
That's how it normally goes, is, you know, you love your enemies and they go on hating you.
Yeah. Yes.
And sometimes more than going on hating you, they go on, you know, doing malevolent things and hurting you and hurting the people that you love. And then you have to go on loving them. And man,
that's,
you know,
hard.
It's really hard, you know, and yet Jesus says, blessed are they who mourn, for they shall be comforted. And so we find our comfort sometimes in very mysterious ways, you know, and the great saints, people like St. Francis of Assisi, for example, went out of their way to experience that kind of rejection. And we're grateful for it because they recognize something in it that I still have a very hard time recognizing, which was that in that experience of rejection and loss, they really were, united with Jesus, in a profound way. They really believed that. I don't really believe that. Not usually when I'm most of the time when I'm suffering. I'm asking the Psalms
are, why me?
Why me, right? Why are these things happening to me and where are you, God, and et cetera, you know? Francis could experience that kind of suffering and rejection and laughter and mockery and contempt from people.
And rejoice.
And really rejoice about it and say, this is what Jesus told me to expect, and I'm experiencing this with Jesus, and thank you for letting me suffer with you, Lord.
Yeah. Teresa, like getting spit on by someone when she was begging for bread and saying, thank you for the gift. I don't think I could.
Yeah, I'm
do that.
I'm really bad at that. And yet, that really is the case, says Jesus. And Jesus insists that it's the case even for those who are experiencing contempt and mockery and loss and rejection, who don't know his name, who are not believers in him, that he's with them even when they are unconscious of it.
There you go. Yes. And that is who is my neighbor.
You know, and that's who is my neighbor. And so, you know, the great warning for us Christians, of course, is he's with them when we reject them, too, because we're being good Christians who, for
yes.
some reason or another, have decided that it's a really good idea to treat this class of human being with contempt. And that's a warning for me as well, because there are, you know, we've all got different people in our lives who we have told ourselves, it's fine if I treat that guy with contempt because of X, you know.
Well, you know, as you know, yes, you know, there's no little asterisk at the end of love thy neighbor saying, you know, except for this guy,
you know. And that's as true for me as it is for anybody. You know, there are certainly people in my life that I know at some level that I'm supposed to love my enemy, but
it's hard.
That guy, you know.
Yeah, not ready yet. Yeah, no, I get that.
And so this, you know, all of this brings us back to the Beatitudes, because the Beatitudes are addressed to the dregs of the earth. And that's why the church puts that reading, that gospel reading that we had yesterday, with those other readings, the readings that are addressed to the remnant, the readings that are addressed to the losers at Corinth,
the oppressed
that Paul is speaking to. You losers,
yes.
says Paul, you know, God has chosen the foolish things and the losers and the dregs of the earth to shame the wise, the people who are smart and rich and powerful and good looking and all the rest of it.
But love always requires sacrifice. And that's, you know, the Beatitudes sound lovely until you have to live them.
Right.
Yeah.
But there are people who are living, Gandhi once remarked that there are people who are living an eternal compulsory fast. You know, the bottom billion of the world, are living, whether they like it or not, and will never ever be doing anything other than living an eternal compulsory fast, not having enough to eat, not having enough to feed their children, not enough clothes on their back, the people that Mother Teresa served.
Yes.
That's a billion people. A lot of them are Muslim.
We're going to answer for that.
Yeah. And a lot of them right now are trying to escape horrors that we can't imagine. And we are saying,
there is no room in the inn.
There's no room. Go away. It's not my problem.
Going to the other side of the street so that we won't be unclean by having to deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's true, you know, because I'm told on a daily basis, you know, today I was hearing, you know, why do we care about refugees when we don't care about our own homeless and our veterans? And, you know, the response is not, yeah.
Why did we have to care for both?
We could take care of all three. And the dumbest thing that we can do is use our homeless and our veterans as human shields for ignoring refugees.
Yeah. It's kind of like people who say, well, if you don't care for the poor, then you can't say you're pro-life because you care for the unborn. No, we should care for the poor and the unborn. Yes.
Yes. Care for the poor. Why is this complicated? You know, it's not like the unborn are the opposite of refugees, or the opposite of veterans, or the opposite of the homeless. All of these people are human beings who have dignity from conception to natural death. And so we should be supporting all of them. And the idea of turning, you know, one or more of these classes of human being against the other so that we could ignore them all.
Yes, because, that's the real thing that happens, yes.
It's just crazy. You know, how can we as Catholics do that? And so the church calls us to just, all you got to do is just remember, sacred from conception to natural death. That's really it. Which human being is excluded from that? Well, none of them are. And that's what we're talking about when we're talking about the Beatitudes is, then we're talking about the least of these people who do hunger and thirst for righteousness, who are in mourning right now.
And so that means what do we do now is we need to figure out how we can help the Calcuttas that are in front of us, the Beatitudes, who are the meek in front of us that we're not seeing, who are the those who are mourning, who are those who are poor in spirit, who are those who are hungering and thirsting for righteousness. And those are the ones we need to minister to right now.
Yeah. 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 And that's, you know, so what do we do? Well, we start where we are and we look around and we say, how can we enact the church's teaching right here, right now? One of the ways that we can do that, you know, of course, is you can help with the unborn. There are crisis pregnancy centers, but there's a lot more that needs to be done than just getting people born. You can also help in other ways. So one of the things you can do is make a lot of loud noise about our unjust policy toward refugees that was just enacted by the Trump administration. If you do that, guess what? Some of those refugees are pregnant. And if your thing is the unborn, well, you're helping the unborn too.
There you go.
And so that's what we do, is we pay attention to the whole of the church's teaching and not just the bit that we like.
You've been listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. Our co-host is Sherry Antonetti, and we will be back tomorrow talking to Mr. Jeff Farrell. Until then, have a lovely
bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.